Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Pale House Devil by Richard Cantry. Narrated by Joe Hempel. 1. It was close to midnight in Manhattan, and they were still waiting in the van. Ford, short and wiry, was behind the wheel, while Newland, bulkier and a foot taller, slouched in his seat, trying to keep his head from hitting the ceiling of the van. They were dressed all in black and had black balaclavas on their faces so that the only things visible were their eyes, and someone would have to look carefully to see them. They'd been parked at the edge of the alley since twilight, and both men had long since grown bored. Still, they waited, their rifles propped against their legs. Their employer, Mr. Garrick, hadn't given them a description of their target, just the bare outline of what was supposed to happen and how they were supposed to stop it. It was annoying. They didn't work that way normally, but Garrick promised to pay them double their normal fee, so they went along with his nonsense.
"Do you think that's them?" said Newland.
A few yards ahead of them in the alley, a well-dressed man and a haggard woman appeared to be negotiating some kind of deal. Ford watched through what resembled a pair of binoculars, but the tubes were carved from a yew tree and the lenses were the shaved corneas from the eyes of 13 hanged men.
"It's not them," said Ford.
"From the look of them, the girl's got pills or party potions, and the guy's a tourist who doesn't know how to haggle. Besides, they're both dodos." Dodo was what Ford occasionally, and many others routinely, called the undead. It bothered Newland, who was also undead.
"Please don't use that word. It's demeaning," Newland said, "and it makes you sound like a hick."
"Sorry.
We prefer, bah, sure."
"You're right. I'm tired and didn't think."
"It's all right."
"No, it was rude, and I'm sorry."
"You can't help how you were raised.
But you're my partner, and I should be more considerate."
"Apology accepted," said Newland. "Now, are we going to shoot either of those two or not?"
"No, the deal is supposed to be someone alive selling something to a marcheur. That lets these two off the hook."
"Maybe. Let's keep an eye on them. One of them could still be involved."
The van felt cramped after all this time, and they'd finished the coffee hours ago. Ford wanted a smoke, but didn't dare light up when the cherry red end of the cigarette could be spotted. So they waited in silence. The dealer and the tourist finished their business, and the tourist went into the rear of a bodega while the woman remained in the alley. She checked her watch several times.
"You're right," said Ford. "She's part of the deal."
"Nervous?"
"Impatient. I mean, look at her twitch. It won't be long now."
"I hope you're right."
They sat quietly for a few minutes before Ford said,
"Really, man, I'm sorry about the dodo thing."
"I told you it's all right."
"Thank you."
"You're welcome. And also, you should look out the window. This might be it."
Ford sat up as a young woman approached the marcheur. The woman was in a purple velvet dress and had straight black hair that hung down to her waist. He scanned the two women through his special binoculars.
"You're right," he said. "The one in the velvet dress is alive. But I don't like it."
"Me neither. Garrick didn't say the target was a woman, just dressed in velvet, right?"
"That's right." Newland shook his head.
"I don't shoot women."
Ford looked at him.
"We've both shot women.
Really evil ones. Like Elsbeth Bathory evil, not some little thing in a party dress.
Let's keep watching. Maybe she's the right kind for shooting."
For the first time, the nature of the assignment weighed down on Newland. He didn't like the situation one bit, but he knew that if this was indeed their target, he'd have to take the shot. It was his job to kill the living. Ford killed the dead.
Newland said, "Please tell me they're plotting something nefarious."
"Shit," said Ford.
"Shit."
"What?"
He didn't like the tone of Ford's voice.
"There's something else. The party dress?"
"Yes."
"She's pregnant."
Newland reached out and took the binoculars. The haggard, undead woman's aura was a grayish purple, while the young woman's was a bright purple.
"What the hell is this?" said Newland. "If she's selling her kid, I sure as hell will shoot her."
"Yeah, Sir Galahad? And kill the kid, too?"
"I'm gonna keep watching. I want to know exactly what's going on."
Newland was mad now. He knew his distaste for shooting women was hypocritical, since they were every bit as capable of evil as men. Worse, not wanting to shoot a mother was the rankest kind of sentimentality. He didn't like having strong emotional responses to these situations. Strong emotions were for the living, like Ford. He could fly into a rage at a moment's notice, and it accomplished nothing. The undead were supposed to be above such things. But here he was, fretting about some stranger selling what, rationally, was hers to sell. Another moment passed, and Ford said, "A necklace."
"Not the kid?"
"Not the kid."
"What kind of necklace?"
"Expensive looking. Earrings, too. Some bracelets. All gold. All nice-looking stuff."
"Let me see," said Newland,
and Ford handed him the binoculars. He was right. The undead woman was examining a pile of jewelry in a decorated wooden box that the young woman held out. Newland handed the binoculars back to Ford and said,
"You know what this means."
"Of course. It might cost us our fee."
"There's no helping that."
"I guess not." Ford started the van, and they drove to Mr. Garrick's office, where they'd arranged to meet after the hit. They let themselves into the building with a key Garrick had given them and rode the elevator to the penthouse level of the old office building. Newland was out of the elevator first and didn't bother knocking on Garrick's office door before going in. Garrick, 60-ish and in a sharply tailored suit, looked up in surprise. He smiled at the men.
"That was quick," he said. "You boys are every bit as efficient as they say."
The two men came in, and Newland stood very close to Garrick's desk so he could loom over the man. They'd left their rifles in the van.
"Efficient," said Newland. "That's because we can read a scene and know what's happening even from a distance."
"It's what keeps me alive and my partner in one piece," said Ford.
"We read the scene tonight, Mr. Garrick."
"And we didn't like it." Garrick scowled at the men.
"What's it your business to like or not like a particular killing? I hired you to do a job. Did you do it or not?"
"No," said Ford.
"You see, the target was pregnant."
"What difference does that make?" said Garrick. "She was selling her personal jewelry," said Ford. "It was in a silly little box, something cheap and gaudy, the kind someone young like her would love."
"And?" said Garrick.
"It was very expensive jewelry," said Newland. "Much too expensive for her, considering the quality of her dress. The jewelry might have been hers, but she didn't buy it."
"They were a gift," said Ford.
"From you," said Newland.
Garrick sat back in his big leather office chair.
"What the hell are you talking about? I hired you as killers, not psychics."
"There's nothing psychic about it," said Ford.
"It's like we said, about being able to read a scene. You see, a young woman selling jewelry like that, jewelry she couldn't possibly afford, can only mean one thing."
"And what is that?" said Garrick snidely.
"That she's using her rich lover's gifts to her to finance an escape," said Ford.
"From the lover," said Newland. "You hired us to kill her because you got her pregnant, and that's an inconvenience. She was smart enough to know that something was up and was buying a ticket out of town."
Garrick slammed his hands on his desk and stood up.
"Don't get high and mighty with me, boys. You're murderers, not priests, and you don't get a cent until the bitch is dead."
Ford and Newland looked at each other.
"I think you should explain it to him," said Ford.
"Obviously," said Newland, as he took a Sig Sauer P220 pistol from his jacket and emptied the entire clip of 45 rounds into Garrick's body.
The man slammed to the floor, his blood splashing onto the desk and the curtains and the window behind him. The moment his partner was finished, Ford began going through the drawers in Garrick's desk looking for money. Newland went through Garrick's pockets.
"Anything?" said Ford.
Newland shook his head.
$2,000 in cash in his wallet, but that's it."
"Damn. Well, let's take it and go. We need to leave town."
"Not yet," said Newland. "I don't think we're done. Garrick is the kind of guy to have an insurance policy."
Ford stopped.
"You're probably right.
We'll know soon."
A minute passed before Garrick's corpse began to twitch. His limbs convulsed and his eyes fluttered open and shut. His shoulders spasmed and his teeth chattered as if he was cold. Then he stopped, grabbed his desk chair, and dragged himself to his feet. Erect, he looked at Ford and Newland and said, "You're both dead men."
"No, I'm the dead one," said Newland.
"And I kill the dead," said Ford, pulling his own pistol. He shot Garrick between the eyes with one of his special cold iron bullets, and the man fell back to the floor. The killers left, knowing he wouldn't get up again.
"So where are we going?" said Newland. "We can't stay in New York."
"Europe?
I don't like flying, and I hate ships even more."
"We could drive to Montreal. Bigsby's always offering us jobs," said Ford.
"Too cold. My joints get stiff," Ford said.
"Right. So where?" Newland thought for a moment.
"West. As far as we can go."
"Like cowboys?"
"Sure, like cowboys."
"Goddamn Garrick," said Ford.
"Lousy dodo," said Newland.
Ford looked at him. Newland laughed. Then so did Ford. He said, "I'll get us train tickets."
2. They caught a train the next morning from the Port Authority for a 3-day trip to Los Angeles. Ford got them a sleeper cabin, and they settled in. During the night, they'd bought some paperback mystery novels and magazines. Each man had earbuds and music on their phones. They both enjoyed trains and understood how to travel by land, how to slow their pace, how to move within the confines of their small cabin and be comfortable with long periods of quiet, with just the rattle of the tracks filling the space between them. Ford had picked up snacks the night before, but around 6 he decided to get a real dinner in the dining car and asked if Newland wanted to join him.
"No thanks. Those places make me uncomfortable."
Ford said,
"Yeah, but we should really talk about our work situation. And I'm starving."
"Can't we talk when you get back?"
"I'd like someone to watch my back on the off chance that Garrick is friends. Besides, I'm probably going to fall asleep when I get back."
It was the nature of the undead not to sleep. Newland would simply go into a dreamless fugue state for a few hours every couple of days, and that was all the rest he needed. Sleep was one of the few things for which he envied the living, and he didn't want to deprive his partner of a pleasure he wished for himself.
"Fine," he said, suddenly annoyed by their situation, about being on the run. However, there was nothing to do but go along with it and see how it played out.
He put on his shoes and followed Ford to the dining car. Inside, they found a table by a window. They were in deep country, and there was nothing but hills and greenery as far as either of them could see.
"I wish I knew about trees and that kind of thing," said Ford.
"Why?"
"Then I'd know what we were looking at instead of it being just a big mishmash of..."
He waved his hands at the window.
"Stuff," said Newland. "Random nature stuff."
"Exactly. Random nature stuff.
It's the price of growing up a city kid,"
Ford said. "I should have bought a book on trees before we left New York."
"You can get one in L.A.
"Speaking of L.A.
"Yes, everyone will know what happened in New York," said Newland. "Do you think there will be guns waiting for us?"
"It's true that they'll know, but I don't know anyone in L.A. who's particularly fond of Garrick. Do you?"
"No, but the local outfits might object to the overall nature of our actions."
"If no one will give us work, then we'll move on," said Ford.
"San Francisco?"
"Everybody loves us in San Francisco.
But let's check out L.A. first," said Newland. "Get a feel for where our reputation stands. If we need to, maybe take a job or two at a reduced rate, just to show we're team players."
Ford was eating a steak with green beans and mashed potatoes. Newland hadn't eaten in years, but he appreciated the smell of it, even if the sight of the living shoveling food into their mouths was unpleasant. He didn't order any food, but had a cup of black coffee in front of him just to fit in. Every now and then he took small sips, knowing he'd vomit it all up when they got back to the cabin.
"I was thinking the same thing," said Ford.
"Play it cool. Get the lay of the land. Besides, we haven't been in L.A. in years. Maybe we can take in the sights."
Newland took a sip of his coffee and said, "I'm going back to the cabin. That guy keeps looking at me funny."
"A cop?" said Ford, concern in his voice.
"I don't know, but I don't like it. Besides, I want to get this stuff out of my stomach. I'll see you back there."
"Okay, I won't be long. Just try to relax. We're both a little on edge after last night."
Newland nodded and left the dining car.
Back in the cabin, he vomited easily into the toilet and flushed the coffee away, Sitting on his bunk, he took a big gulp from a bottle of goofer juice, the only thing he consumed. It was a combination of blood, holy water, soil from a grave and consecrated ground, and a dozen other ingredients that the brewers held secret. The juice kept Newland sharp so he could do his job well and not become his greatest fear. Just another shambling pile of undead bones, as useless as a Skid Row wino. Ford came back to the cabin a few minutes later, kicked off his shoes and settled into his bunk. He said, "You feeling any better?"
"About what?"
"Getting out of the dining car. I checked around before I came back. The crowd looked like the usual bored dummies to me."
"Good. Maybe I was just a little paranoid."
"It'll be good to have a couple of days to unwind."
"It might be nice to go to the beach when we get to L.A., said Newland. "I haven't seen the ocean in years."
"I'd like that."
"The beach.
Let's do that." Ford settled back in his bunk with a camera magazine and read about the new models coming out. Newland read a Patricia Highsmith novel. Around 10, there was a light knock on their door. The two men looked at each other. Newland got up and said,
"Who is it?"
"A friend with a business proposition."
It was a man's voice, low and rumbling. Newland looked back at Ford, who shook his head.
"We're on vacation," said Newland. "You must be looking for someone else."
The voice came again.
"Only if there's another dead man on this train."
Newland opened the door, and a man pushed past him into the small cabin. Though his voice had been deep and large through the door, he wasn't that big. He wore a wrinkled suit jacket, and his thin hair was a mess. Someone who didn't know how to travel well, thought Newland. Still, the man had something going for him. He knew what Newland was. The stranger spoke again.
"My name is Jake Whetton. I'm a private investigator from Pasadena. And I know one of you is a dodo."
He looked at Newland.
"You, to be exact."
"What do you want, Jake Whetton, pea-fucking-eye?" said Ford.
"I'll tell you, but first you both need to know that I called my partner and told him about what I'm doing. If anything happens to me, he'll alert the authorities who deal with things like your friend."
"You didn't answer my question." Jake looked from one man to the other and laughed.
"Money, you asshole. Cash now, or my partner calls the garbage squad. You have 3 minutes to hand it over."
"How much do you want?" said Newland.
"All of it. Everything you have."
He looked at Newland.
"Something like you. What do you need money for? If you have money, it means you took it from a living person, someone who deserved it."
"What about me?" said Ford. "I'm alive."
"True. But fuck you for throwing in with a goddamned ghoul. Now show me some cash. You have about 2 minutes left."
2 minutes, said Newland. Ford shook his head. "That's not very long."
"Damn right," said Whetton. "Now let's see it."
Ford stood from his bunk. He said, "Let me make a counteroffer," and punched Whetton in the jaw. The man dropped to his knees, blood streaming from a split lip. Ford hit him again and knocked the man unconscious. Newland got his bottle of goofer juice and poured some into Wetton's mouth. The man sputtered but kept it down. He came to a moment later and pulled himself up from the floor.
"That was a big mistake," he said. "You're both fucked now."
"I don't think so," said Ford. Newland held out his phone.
"No bars," he said.
"No bars on mine either," said Ford, "and it's been that way most of the day."
"So you were lying. You didn't call anyone."
Whetton wobbled on his feet. He wiped at his bleeding mouth with the sleeve of his jacket, then made a face and spit on the floor. "Got a funny taste in your mouth?" said Ford. "It's called goofer juice." Whetton went pale.
"You didn't."
"He didn't," said Newland.
"I did.
You might want to go lie down. You have about 12 hours before it takes effect."
"Until you die," said Ford,
"and then wake up."
"And are like me," said Newland.
Whetton slumped against the wall.
"You're lying."
"Wait and see."
"I'm a ghoul," whispered Whetton.
"Not yet, but soon."
He looked at Newland.
"Filthy baby eater."
Ford laughed and said, "Yeah, babies.
Cats and dogs, too. And PIs, said Newland. You can't help the hunger. It grows and grows. Don't worry. It's not your fault. You're just another thing now.
Oh, God, said Wetton. Mother Mary.
He pushed his way out of the cabin, tripped and fell in the corridor that ran the length of the train car.
Mother Mary, protect me,
he said, and stumbled back toward the dining car. Newland shut the cabin door.
Do you think we should go after him?
Ford lay back on his cot.
You heard him. A nice Catholic boy like that, he'll do the right thing.
Newland sat and slowly said,
Baby eater.
Ford gave him a sympathetic look.
The shit some people will believe.
Newland got up and went into the little bathroom to throw water on his face, still weighing whether he should go after Wetton and finish him. But a moment later came the sound of a muffled explosion. He went out and looked at his partner. Even on a noisy train, both men recognized the sound of a gunshot. Ford smiled.
What did I tell you? He handled it himself.
Idiot, said Newland.
Completely.
One more reason I'm glad we're heading west.
You mean how there are too many second-rate randos with big ideas back home?
Said Ford.
Big ideas and big guns.
I need to get away from it for a while.
Sounds good to me.
Newland wiped his face on a towel and scowled as something occurred to him. He went to his bunk and said,
What if he had a satellite phone? He might have called his partner after all.
Ford thought about it. He was a mess. Small time. A guy like that doesn't have a satellite phone.
Maybe he's a gadget freak like some people.
Newland nodded toward Ford's camera magazine.
I should have followed him to his cabin to be sure.
If he had a satellite phone, he would have said so. It's going to be all right.
Maybe, said Newland.
Both men sat up the rest of the night with their guns nearby. Eventually, the train stopped, and they heard the sound of police in the car examining Wetton's room and removing the body. No one came to their cabin. In the morning, Ford went to the dining car, ate a quick breakfast, and came back. Newland was still waiting with his pistol handy. Ford lay down on his bunk and said,
Relax, it's over.
Newland put his gun under his pillow and lay down too. Wetton reminded him of the men, it was always men, and mostly from the city, who would come to the swamp where he'd spent so many years in servitude. The men all wanted the same thing, secrets. Secrets to power, secrets to riches, secrets to immortality. They would offer mansions, exotic cars, women, even children, whatever they thought of as valuable. But the swamp people could spot a card shark or thief as easily as a buzzard spots a carrion meal. The lucky strangers got away with their lives, but often missing an eye or some fingers because there was powerful magic in those things. The unlucky men joined Newland in his numb servitude. He never felt sorry for a single one of them. Ford slept, and Newland willed himself into a fugue state, but neither man really rested. Both awoke bitter that what was supposed to have been a pleasant trip had been completely spoiled.
3.
It walked through the parlor of the old house, though few would consider what it did truly walking. It oozed on its belly and dragged the rest of itself on many short legs, like some huge gelatinous insect. The tube of its mouth, lined with both teeth and slits like that of a baleen whale, protruded as it moved, sucking mice and spiders into its enormous belly. It even lapped dust with its long tongue because it could sustain itself on mere filth. No one could see it unless it wanted to be seen. But there had been few enough people in the house over the last few years for it to remember the pleasure of showing its form. So, it remained in a state of ghostly transparency, its presence marked only by its tiny footprints on the dirty floor and the fact that the house remained virtually vermin-free even though it had been empty for many years. Few things outside dared to come in, and nothing caught inside ever got out. Still, it wasn't content. It longed for more stimulation and better food. It slept for months at a time so that seasons seemed to pass by in a single day. It remembered when people used to live in the house, and how fun it had been to play with them because they were so soft and pink and tasty. It would appear before them and then disappear a moment later. There were shrieks, wide-eyed sprints down dark halls before they tumbled down the stairs, the crunch of their bones. It missed the smell and the taste of humanity. But here it was, trapped like a roach within the house's whitewashed walls. It would have wept if it had eyes, properly moaned if it could. The best it could muster in its sorrow was a slurping, gurgling trill through its long-tubed mouth that reminded it of the moans of the screaming handyman it had once drowned in the upstairs tub. So it waited, in boredom and misery. The only thing that sustained it was knowing its anguish wouldn't last forever. This was a house, and it knew the soft things didn't let go of houses easily. Sooner or later, someone would come back. Sooner or later, someone would return to play. 4. There was no ambush waiting for them in L.A., but there wasn't any work either. Everybody knew about the Garrick affair, and no one liked it. During their first couple of days in town, Ford and Newland set up meetings with Jimmy Graham, Big Tommy Wong, and Mia Solonatsin. They even rented a car and drove out to Covina to see Rudy J, with his greasy hair, his bad breath, and his two small suits. They played it cool because being cool was their nature, even when in dire circumstances, which the trip was turning out to be. Every contact they had, every lowlife who'd ever approached them with a job offer, now had the same answer. Fuck off. The crews didn't want to work with Newland especially. Some intrepid reporter had stumbled on evidence of LAPD's Marshore cleanup squad. Rumors of the undead walking among the living were all over the local media, and no crew wanted to stick its neck out, especially for a couple of killers who'd murdered their own client and then split town. We are shit out of luck in L.A., said Ford back in their suite at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Newland sat on one of the beds with the TV remote in his hand. An old black-and-white cowboy movie he didn't recognize played silently on the set. It's mostly my fault, Newland said. I'm the pariah right now. Maybe you should go out on your own, at least for a while. I can go to Mexico, and maybe the story about the undead will play itself out. Ford dropped into a leather chair by the window. You're not going anywhere. We're partners, and what we do doesn't work without both of us. You could split town. Find a new dead man, or woman, to partner with. Stop talking like that. You sound like my grandma. Anything bad happened, it was the end of the world. This is just a rough patch. We'll get through it. Newland stared at the TV for a moment. During a commercial, he said, I'm not sorry about New York. If I had to do it all over again, I would. Me too, so stop obsessing and let's think this through. I don't think there's a lot to think about. You said it. We're done in L.A. Ford got out his phone and scanned his address book. He said, What about showbiz creeps? I still have some producer and agent contacts. There's always a shitty movie in trouble somewhere with the leading man the studio wants to murder for the insurance. Maybe, said Newland, brightening. It's better than nothing, I suppose. Sure, make some calls. Ford made some calls, a dozen of them. Newland went out to get him a burrito from his favorite place a few blocks away. The round trip took perhaps 30 minutes. When he returned, he found Ford standing in the open door of a fire exit, puffing a cigarette and blowing the smoke into the empty stairwell. Ford thanked Newland for the burrito, but just held it to his side. Newland said, How did it go? Ford flicked his cigarette butt down the metal stairs. He said, We are shit out of luck in L.A. They checked out of the hotel the next morning and drove north in the rental car, finally ditching it at Oakland Airport. Ford had used a fake ID to rent it, so there was no way to trace it back to them. In San Francisco, they decided not to set up meets. Coming at the problem head-on hadn't worked in L.A., so it was time to try a new strategy. Instead of begging for work, they simply appeared in certain bars and restaurants in North Beach, Chinatown, The Mission, and SoMa. They made sure it was known they were around, but they didn't make a big deal of it. They knew word would soon circulate to the right people. Work with
Sample complete. Ready to continue?